What's up? This is the Sisters in Therapy podcast. I'm Dr. Mercedes, LMFTS.
I'm Dr. Brittany Harrell, LPC.
I'm Dr. TK, LMFTS.
We are inviting you to be a part of our thoughtful, passionate conversations about all things life as it relates to mental health, because everything relates to mental health.
But more importantly, we're here to inspire you to love yourself and others.
This is a podcast where you'll get dope sessions, no copay, and keep in mind that this podcast is not meant to be a replacement relationship with a mental health professional. Now, let's get into the session. What's up, y'all? We are back with another session. Last week, we talked about mental health and the surrounding topics with that. This episode or session, we are talking about therapy, and I'm so excited because that's our specialty.
Mm-hmm. We do it. Specialty.
Yes, I'm Dr. B. I am a licensed professional counselor. We also have Dr. Mercedes Moore. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and Dr. Takesha Hawkins. She's also a licensed marriage therapist. So,
okay,
Sadies, what are our talking points this time?
So, what is therapy?
Yes,
mental health care.
Yes.
So therapy is a place where people go to talk about their mental health. Mm-hmm. Or mental health is like the caveat. Mm-hmm. But there are so many different topics that fall under mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Talk therapy is what we're speaking specifically about. It's a space that you go to talk to a professional who is licensed. Maybe let's start with talking about the different type of therapist.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I like that.
Okay. Because we're all here. Because we're all here, but we're all different types of therapists. Right. Well, me and Takesha are licensed marriage and family therapists. Mm-hmm. And essentially what that means is that we treat mental health or relationship issues within the context of individual couples and families.
Mm-hmm.
I specifically work a lot with couples, but I also work with individuals. I do some work with families, but I don't get a lot of families in private practice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's either couples or just the children. Or just individuals. So most of the time, but I think in graduate school, during practicum, they said you got to get creative and help people see that they actually need to come as a family.
Yeah.
Because people think they need to work on things in different segments.
For sure.
Where, no, we need to work on it together as a whole.
Yeah.
So, Brittany, you are a?
Licensed professional counselor. I would say LPC is kind of more of a general practice. But I primarily work with individuals. That is my cup of tea. And I work with adults. That is also my cup of tea. I did try to work with children. I tried to dabble in different populations, but I found my fit with adults.
Okay.
So that's what I do. Individual talk therapy, primarily telehealth therapy
for
the moment. But yes, I work with adults, varying of issues, anxiety, depression, relationships, not couples, but just a person's experience in their relationships, self-esteem. That's like my favorite topic.
Okay.
Self-esteem, imposter syndrome. So kind of whatever a person comes to me with an issue, that's what we address. But self-esteem, anxiety are kind of like my kryptonite kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Okay.
And for me, I see some children. I used to see children a lot more. I now mostly work with adult women.
Mm-hmm.
I work a lot around specifically like the superwoman role or women's issues. I pretty much have a feminist lens in how I provide therapy.
Ooh, she said the F word, guys.
I did. It's what I do. I'm very proud of it. yes, because we need to decolonize these mindsets, these gender roles, these things that are not really serving us. And that is
a great topic.
My specialty. That's my shit.
Love that.
Okay. So in the state of Texas, we all fall under the umbrella called licensed professionals of the healing arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's licensed marriage and family therapists, which is what me and Takesha, and then licensed professional counselors. And then you have the licensed clinical social workers or the licensed social workers in general. Mm-hmm. And then you also have psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
We all provide counseling. Everybody kind of trained differently, but the goal is the same.
Right.
To provide mental health care.
Right.
And so, speaking of therapy, I would like for people to know that your therapist should be Googleable in the sense of they have a state license.
Mm-hmm.
Not a certificate, but a license. And so, I have actually found that people are sitting down with in therapy, but they're not actually sitting down with therapists. Mm-hmm. So part of this this session is to educate people about the different types of therapists, because it can be intimidating, all of the acronyms. Mm-hmm. People always say, okay, what are you again? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's Brittany?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to even differentiate it a little bit more, psychiatrists are medical doctors. Facts. But they also work in the medical field. So they are the medical professionals in mental health.
True.
And I think we do have to identify with that. A lot of people come to me and say, I went to the psychiatrist. They didn't really help me. They just tried to give me meds.
That's their job.
They are not there
yeah.
to provide you therapy.
Yeah.
They're here to help you work on your mental health in regards to medication yeah. and how it's interacting with the internal parts mm-hmm. Of your bodily chemistry.
Right.
Best treatment. Mm-hmm. For anxiety, depression, studies have proven that it's the combination of talk therapy
yes.
and medication. They are not there to give you therapy.
No, not at all. I think the longest session you'll get with a psychiatrist is the first session, because they have to get your full history mm-hmm. so they can properly mm-hmm. Prescribe medicine to you. Mm-hmm. But appointments after that are going to be 15 minutes, if not less, because they're just checking in on how the medication is working for you mm-hmm. or if they need to make any changes.
And so that's important to know, because you have the right expectation for which provider that
Correct.
You're seeing.
Yes.
But more importantly, whoever you sit down to share your mental health care with, I mean, mental health journey or relationship issues or whatever problems that you're presenting with or symptoms, they should be licensed.
Yes.
They should be licensed. And yes. if they're not licensed, they should be a mental health professional or a rehab clinician of some sort, qualified mental health professional. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be sitting down with, I want to say.
I want to say that healing can look very different, and there are lots of things that can be healing.
Absolutely.
However, Ooh. If you are looking for therapy, please do not go to a life coach and say you are in therapy.
Or your trainer.
That is not therapy. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's not.
Yeah.
Or a yoga instructor. Yeah.
It's not therapy. It's yoga. And call it what it is. A workout is a workout.
And also, some pastors sit down and do counseling, and they are not therapists.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the Christian counselors, because they are. They can provide counsel.
Yeah, because they're licensed.
But it's important to, and I think that when you sit down, when you allow people to sit down with you and you call it therapy and you're not a therapist, that is stigma.
Absolutely.
That is stigma.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you need to question yourself in, like, this, you are not offering
ethical,
responsible practices if you want to help a person heal. And again, healing can look very different and happen in a variety of different mediums. I'm here for it. But be responsible with your care. Say what you are here to do. Do not say that you're providing therapy. Do not say that you have these credentials. You don't.
But let's talk about why that is problematic.
Which part?
Sitting down with to do therapy with people who are not therapists.
Why it's problematic? Mm-hmm.
Mostly when they don't know.
It's problematic because it's doing harm. One, because I've had conversations with people who tell me about their therapy experiences. And as I dig deeper, I find out the person they sat down with, they were not a therapist.
Yeah.
So therefore, it leads to people thinking therapy does not work. Therapy is not for me, when actually they're not even sitting down with therapists.
Yeah.
What are you noticing, the things that are coming up that they might be experiencing with unlicensed people that mm-hmm. would not probably be their experience for the most part? Not to say that there aren't some.
Whew.
Wouldn't be as likely with licensed therapists.
So what I have heard from people is, so from couples, what I've heard is that there was really no space given to the fact other than you need to submit to your husband. Mm. That's something I've heard from couples. And so that, I think that's problematic, because then two people are not being heard in that space.
Right.
And then another one is also, you know, it getting back to somebody else, and then also mm-hmm. it being used in a way that is not helpful or productive for this person, because it's coming up outside of the space in which they shared it in. Mm-hmm. And then also no real interventions other than yeah. you should just get over it.
That's the main difference.
I was about to say that for me yeah. is the main difference too, yeah. is the intervention part, because you can talk to anybody.
Right.
But those people outside of their lived experience don't have an array of interventions.
I don't right. know if people know what you mean when you say lived experiences, because we talked about that in the last session. So what are lived experiences?
Lived experiences are the way that we all individually navigate through life.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of us have our very own lived experiences, and we have to all be What we all have to acknowledge and be aware that everybody's walk of life looks different.
Yes. Okay.
So even our siblings who grew up in the same home with us, we all have different bodies. We all maybe have different hair. We all look different. Our minds are all different. We maybe go to different schools, or we get different versions of our parents based on how they parent. That contributes to our very different lived experiences and how we process the world.
So lived experiences are essentially like, my childhood is a lived experience, right? My,
all of your life, yes.
Right. So when you think about therapy and people show up with their lived experiences, what is appropriate for therapy, the therapy space? A lot of people ask me, not a lot of people ask me, but a lot of people question, what am I going to therapy for? A lot of people don't know if they should be in this space. Why, how do people know they should go to therapy?
That's a good question. I feel like we all have a moment where it's like, I don't know now. I'm feeling distant from myself, or things are a bit stressful. My life is different. It turned out different than I anticipated. Like, I think there's people think that you have to have extreme trauma or have lived these super chaotic lives to go to therapy, when it could be a good, healthy maintenance practice for you. Because you could still have self-awareness and still go, right? Like,
absolutely.
I think it's you go. If it's you feel you're trying to work through your thoughts, you realize that people aren't as available. Friendships are changing. It's just different life changes sometimes that end up. Because I, like I said, I feel like we all have, whether we're avoidant or not, I think people have a moment where it's like, yo, I don't know. Whether you feel it physically or emotionally.
I was about to say, even when that just general like confusion, for me, when a general like confusion even pops up of, maybe I don't know how I'm feeling. Maybe I don't know what I need right now. I don't know if I'm, like you said, if I'm going left, if I'm going right, what's what. So maybe I just need a different type of support, or I need somebody to help me kind of make sense of where I'm at and what I need. Because I don't know, but I know something's off.
So then the signs in which something is off. Let's speak to that. So if you think about, like, if you are struggling to get out of bed multiple days in a row, if you are not taking a shower for weeks.
I was about to say, look at what is different in your life.
If, like, you no longer find enjoyment in things that you once found enjoyment in, positive things that you once found enjoyment in, if you're feeling hopeless, if you're not tending to, like, your hygiene, not just showering, but, like, maybe brushing your teeth and, you know, clean. I mean, just neglecting just these things of yourself. Something is off.
Absolutely. And those things, though, are some of the more traditional,
those are traditional
symptoms of depression happen. They are. I will say that I've noticed working with Black and brown people, it look a little bit different than that. Because you ask them about showering, they're like, nah, bro, I ain't got no.
That is true.
I'm good on that. You ain't never got to worry about that.
Black people will still take care of their hygiene.
Actually, so look at the other, there are other things you can look for.
Sometimes people have difficulty with connecting and or having long-term relationships. Friendships, romantic, that sometimes is a sign to, something's not.
Intimacy,
that's something that.
So people are feeling disconnected, not only from themselves, but from the people in their lives.
Look at what's coming up different for you. Because I know even for me, if I am having more nightmares, that's a signal to me. Because I don't have nightmares. Sometimes I don't even really just dream like that. So if I'm having a nightmare, I know for me, because I've paid attention, I've checked in with myself how I'm feeling on a day-to-day. Oh, you're overwhelmed about something, or you're stressed about something. Something ain't, like, things aren't lining out, and this is how it shows up in me.
Yeah, for me, that's why I think resiliency is a slippery slope.
It's a very slippery slope, girl.
I can do, and I can keep going, and I can do it successfully.
And that's the Black and brown community. So just because you're still going to work and paying the bills and keeping your house clean. Is not the, shouldn't be the indicator, shouldn't be the scale that you're looking at.
So think about managing your mental health.
That's
a good point.
Not for Black and brown people.
I said that's a good point. So I think that's a good point about what you just said, the high functioning side of the downfall of your mental health. It leads to you kind of being extreme in some areas, such as going to the gym. That's a big one. And one of the biggest misconceptions is that people like to say the gym is therapy. The gym is therapy. The gym is my therapy. Oh, this is therapy. So I'm always like, I used to get really upset when people say that. It used to piss me off. But I become curious now and just ask, have you ever been to therapy? Because if so, there's no way you think that the gym is your therapy.
Yeah.
But they're like, no. But it is, though. I said, no, it's therapeutic.
Right.
Therapeutic, because therapy is when you sit down with a licensed mental health professional. I want you to go to the gym. You know what I think? Therapists tell people to go to the gym. I don't know if trainers say, hey, man, maybe you should go talk to somebody. You seem to be...
I mean, there probably are some out there, but on a larger scale, you are correct. I often wonder, too, how to bridge that gap with the type of language that people use, because people understand things in their language.
But that's stigma. Right?
Yes.
When you say the gym is therapy.
Correct. But I wonder then, how do we make things relatable then?
Tell me more about what you're saying, because I'm confused, I think, a little bit.
I think it goes back to kind of just what Mercedes was saying in the previous episode or the previous session of just getting comfortable talking about therapy. I even have this conversation with my clients of, if you know this person in your life is struggling, what's stopping you from being, you know, loving, caring friend or sibling, whatever the case might be, and just say, you know, I've went to therapy. This was my experience. It was helpful for me. We have to normalize
that's our that responsibility, it's okay. I think, as people, to say something
to
like
one
that.
Another. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think normalize. We can change. Yeah, I don't think we can change the language.
Yeah.
If we continue to try to change the language, then we are contributing to stigma.
Yeah, no, I don't want to change the language. I know people do what they think is their best way of explaining how they are living healthy lives, right? So like,
that's
technically, I'm not saying it's right, but technically, right, that's their therapeutic practice. That is
therapeutic
their form.
I want them to use the word therapeutic.
Correct. That is their form of their practice.
And
right?
It's a great practice. So it's a coping skill. We all work out. We're all athletes or ex-athletes. We know the importance of exercise for your mood.
Yeah.
But you can't exercise your way out of, say, suicidal thoughts. You can't exercise your way out of trauma. You just can't do it. So when you leave that gym, those things gonna come right on back. So it's a difference between the gym being a coping mechanism versus a distraction. People are using the gym as a distraction.
Which many coping skills can be.
Yes.
Yeah. Come on, somebody.
No, for real. And the reason why it's problematic, because when you use that language, people then feel guilty for wanting to go to therapy.
Yeah.
They feel shame because why do I need to go to therapy? You know, they saying the gym is therapy. Not too much on that, though, because I'm over that topic. But because, yeah.
But there is shame with it.
Yeah, it's shame
and
with it.
And it's two-sided. One, because therapy has its own stigma in itself. Mental health has its own stigma in itself.
Yeah.
But then even outside of that, the way people talk about, well, just go to church or just go to the gym, it further stigmatizes, damn, if I need this, if the gym just won't do it for me, if just church won't do it for me, that must be really fucked up. Like, it just pushes us all further and further.
I dislike that we live in a world where everybody needs to go to therapy, but we are all trying to be well and trying to figure out what that looks like. And that requires us to be honest with ourselves. Speaking of honesty, when you do decide that you want to go to therapy, that is going to be your best friend in the therapy space. Honesty.
Yeah.
And vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you ask me how would therapy be helpful, I would say it won't be helpful if you're not honest and if you're not vulnerable. You won't get the desired outcomes.
In addition to that. I think people assume that it's going to fix their life, right? Like if you go to therapy and you continue to occupy the same environments that are contributing to you not being well, it's not going to work.
And sometimes people can't escape their environments, right?
That
so for
true.
Example, so we trying to teach people how to show up differently in those environments if they can't remove themselves from those environments, such as the B word, boundaries.
I was thinking of another word.
Hello, boundaries. Because boundaries are essential for a balanced mental health.
We
are they
childish,
not?
Bro. Sorry. Go ahead.
My second favorite B word. Okay, go ahead.
Boundaries are essential for a balanced mental health. People come to therapy and learn how to set. That's literally the first sign that somebody knows you're in therapy because you start setting boundaries with them.
So I love this because I always prepare clients for when they start setting boundaries. So what are ways that you all prepare your clients when they are interested in setting boundaries? How do you prepare them?
Okay. That's a good one because, one, they need to be prepared. But because it's going to catch them off guard, how people are going to be drastically offended mm-hmm. by them setting boundaries. But I kind of tell my clients, because 9 times out of 10, now not all of them, because some of my clients don't care, but 9 times out of 10, you will feel guilty for setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, you won't set boundaries without feeling guilty. Mm-hmm. One, because you care about people. Mm-hmm. You care about these people so much so that you're willing to put yourself last because you have no boundaries. And now, as a result of that, your mental health is kind of dwindling. Mm-hmm. And so be prepared for you to feel guilty. Mm-hmm. But let the guilt guide you in a direction where you're honoring yourself and not kind of reneging on what you know you need to do.
For sure.
Which is set the boundary.
For sure.
And I always tell my clients to follow up with that, that if setting a boundary that only helps you and doesn't harm anyone else, mm-hmm. ruins the relationship, then that's probably not a safe and loving person anyway.
Yep.
Because you taking care of yourself shouldn't be offensive.
Right.
It shouldn't be something that ruins the relationship.
Yeah.
Also, but people are used to you showing up a certain way. So the change does throw them off.
For sure.
So I always
give them time to adjust.
And I always tell people, communicate. Hey, mm-hmm. I need to do things differently because the way I've been doing it is not working for me. So I may have some better boundaries just for my own mental health. And that really gonna give you all you need to know about what this person think of you, because they're either gonna be one super supportive or they're gonna make their little jokes. Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And then that means you need to talk to your therapist about how to move accordingly with that relationship. I'm not saying cut people off. I'm saying talk to your... Because this is so that we can speak to the fact why therapy is helpful for talking about things such as this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Britt?
What am I saying? preparing clients for...
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of setting boundaries.
Kind of the same thing. I always say just pay attention to how people respond to you being a little bit more assertive where you weren't before.
Facts.
Or just you kind of, I don't want to say limiting your access, but kind of just doing things, learning how to do things that you don't, or not doing things you don't want to do, right? Mm-hmm. Like just pay attention to, because you might not know how to respond when somebody like comes back at you mm-hmm. with, it's kind of like, oh, that's an observation, like you mental notes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, what I essentially say is don't be surprised if people respond in a way that isn't, mm-hmm. encouraging
or empowering or affirming,
mm-hmm. correct,
or affirming,
which you said can lead to guilt and lead to all these other things. And for me, I usually always turn that back to, now this is a boundary that you have to set with yourself,
yes,
to release yourself from the responsibility of making them feel better about your boundary,
because you can't be at peace with them and at war with yourself mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. And you have to, when you go to bed at night, you have to be able to sleep with you. Mm-hmm. That means you have to honor yourself. And boundaries mean I am honoring myself.
Right.
And then consistency mean I am going to continue to honor myself because I am establishing a healthy relationship with self. Mm-hmm. Because you can't, because it's not sustainable to be any other way. What is going to lead to? Resentment. You're going to resent the friendship. You're going to resent all these things.
Yeah.
I feel like you want to say something.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask, what do y'all think are some misconceptions about what boundaries actually are? Or ways that you've seen people set boundaries, but it's really not a boundary?
Ridiculous ways.
I will say a misconception that I continue to see is boundaries is not intended for you to control the people in your life.
No, not at all.
It's not intended for that. It's not also intended to... be mean about it.
No, or, not at all.
Say it can be, people can be mean.
Yeah,
right.
People can weaponize it.
Yes.
What does weaponize mean?
They can turn it, essentially turn something that is supposed to be a good thing or vulnerability or like a caring, safe thing.
Like getting and consequences.
And you make it then a weapon, because a boundary is supposed to be something that empowers us. It's it's a tool for all of us to use for empowerment.
Okay.
People weaponize that when they take it and they say, a boundary of mine is not cleaning the bathroom, so you need to clean it every night yourself.
I have never heard that. People are out here saying this?
I haven't heard.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. What? Like, I'm not going to do this, so you have to do it. Because it's a boundary. Because everything's a boundary.
Yeah.
No, it's not. That's not a boundary.
Yeah, I think people don't understand.
That's manipulation.
It's manipulation. And boundaries aren't intended for control. And I think...
Okay.
I actually had a conversation with a client about this, like, sometime last year. And the response was like, well, then if they can't respect that, then there are consequences. I said, okay, hold on, wait.
Okay, so you're calling your client out in therapy about this. Yes. So therapy is also a great place for accountability.
Yes. I said, okay, explain to me what you mean by consequences, because this is somebody that you live with. What are consequences? Because can't just cut somebody off if you live with them, right?
Like, but that comes with that effective communication.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not the passive aggressiveness.
Right.
What's the difference in effective communication versus
passive aggressiveness?
Passive aggressive, or just having a general conversation that isn't.
So effective communication requires you to tap into a level of vulnerability. Hmm. Passive aggressiveness means you don't get to be vulnerable. You get to kind of attack people and criticize them, versus effective communication is saying, using I, taking ownership of what you're saying, mm-hmm. versus saying you did this to me, right. is really leading with, I feel this way. Of course, people, it sounds so preschool to say, I feel this way because you did this. Mm-hmm. But that is effective communication. That's you saying, I feel this, taking ownership of your emotions. And I would like to have a conversation because I don't want to feel like this.
Right. It's a responsible, direct way of communicating what it is you feel or have been thinking about, whether it be the relationship or whatever the issue is. It's being more direct about, because passive aggressive is like, it's talking around what the issue problem. Is, right? Like, well, you didn't do the dishes, so I decided to not go to the grocery store.
Shame, blame. The way I look at it is, one is problem focused. We gonna blame, shame. We gonna come up with all the problems. Okay. The other is more solution focused.
Yes,
there has to be vulnerability a part of it, but it's effective communication because you are effectively talking through what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and likely coming up with a way to practically address it versus we both just going to be mad. We're going to walk away from this. Ain't no solution. We're going to keep coming into this thing over and over again.
So people are being, passive aggressiveness to me is being unclear. And so effective communication is being clear.
Mm-hmm.
And being clear to me is being kind, no matter how hard it is to be clear. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean you're being hateful or you're saying things in a disrespectful way, because you can have a hard conversation in a healthy way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
how?
How?
This is the skills?
We're not talking about communication in this session. We're talking about therapy.
People might want
to
know. Okay.
But that's a great topic to come back to. Therapy is a great place to get those skills for communication. And we'll definitely double back to that for sure.
Yeah, because I got a few things. Because even with effective communication also means that you have to encourage a productive conversation, right? Effective communication does not mean it's just you talking.
No, it's not. Right? It's a feedback loop.
Both parties.
It's a feedback loop
to converse in that moment.
So we're gonna have to come back to that one. That feel like that's gonna be a whole session.
We are.
Yeah, I love it.
I want us to hit really quickly on what you were hitting on before of like expectations in therapy, because you also said being called out, and I think
accountability in the
that's
therapy
an
space.
Expectation that you can expect in the therapy space, and if you don't want that, you might want to sit and think about maybe why you don't want to be called out, and if therapy is the kind of healing that you're looking for.
So basically, how to prepare for therapy.
Love that.
How to prepare for therapy. I would say take some notes about how you feel.
I was gonna say that.
Take some notes about things that have changed in your life. What's keeping, in order to do that, reflect over what's keeping you up at night.
Mm-hmm.
What can you not stop thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that when you come to therapy, like you just said, so I think what I have about therapy and how to get the best outcome is, one, there has to be honesty, vulnerability, and accountability in the therapy space.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those require work. And I'm not talking about work like pushing a vacuum cleaner. That's not the type of work I'm talking about in the therapy space, but
it's heart work.
Heart work. That's a great way to put it, T.
It's not me. I can't remember the reference right now, but somebody said heart work.
That's some a of
the
great word. Heart
work is some of the hardest work you'll ever do.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that.
How to prepare for therapy.
Somebody else.
Heart work. Okay.
I love that.
So when you come to therapy, therapy is not a pill that we can give you.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take everything away. Therapy is a lot like the gym, actually, in regards to working and working out something.
Okay. I was going to say, but you're working out something different.
You're working out something differently.
Right.
And so if you come to therapy and you say, I'm not sleeping well. I don't know what to do about it. And the therapist say, let's talk about a bedtime routine. That sounds so simple. that sound like, oh my God, that's not going to help. But that's the work. Really committing to changing your bedtime routine. Mm-hmm. Or for example, I just can't stop having, I have anxiety. Journaling, that's the work.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, the that's work.
And journaling is underrated in regards to
the importance of it
is in regards to like managing your thoughts and your emotions.
Yeah.
Those are some of the things that we hold people accountable to do in regards to the work.
Yeah.
When it comes to therapy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And
because you have responsibility in your healing. You don't get to show up to therapy and put all the work on the therapist.
Correct.
That's a good point, too.
You're not going to heal that way. This is my therapy space is a mutual responsibility space.
Yes.
It's my responsibility to help you see what's not working. It's my responsibility mm-hmm. to try to provide you with interventions in a way that feel good and right for you. It's your responsibility to do the work outside of the therapy room.
Okay, what is the therapist's responsibility in the therapy room?
One, to provide the safe space.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's number one. Two, there is a guiding practice when it comes to that. But I try to, I don't know who I got it from. I don't know if I got it from you or somebody else. But it's like, yes, technically, yes, I am the expert. But you are the expert.
Oh, yeah.
So how do we encourage more of that?
Oh, absolutely.
Forward thinking of like, oh, I can make these decisions or I can also write down goals.
Facts.
That I want for myself.
That's a collaborative approach.
Correct.
And sometimes a therapist may not take on that role and people may not know that this is what they need. So I'm here to say that a skilled therapist will take on that role because that empowers people and give them autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to note when y'all say empower and when you say them to be a collective part of this process and mm-hmm. treatment planning. These are all feminist therapeutic practices. It's an egalitarian relationship. It's we both get to be humans here. Yes. You have power here. I don't have all the power. I acknowledge I might have the skill.
I always say
but
that.
You are just as responsible mm-hmm. and yes. capable mm-hmm. Of being in this space. And I want you to know that I trust you.
Yes.
And so care for yourself. So let me help you do that.
Yes. Facts. That is how we, the first thing I think a therapist, my role as a therapist is to instill hope and to affirm, mm-hmm. which is kind of what you just said. We have to instill hope because unfortunately when people get to us, they are sometimes hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are a reactive society, so it's only right that people come to therapy once things are already falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like what we're seeing right now, which I don't mind it because we have the skills to address that.
Mm-hmm.
But just know when you do come to therapy, it will take time. One, you got to build rapport. We got to build rapport with each other.
Mm-hmm.
One, we might not be a good fit.
Right. I was just about to get to that. And I want to piggyback off of, and I'm going to come back to your point, but I want to piggyback off of what you were saying, like it's a collaborative process. With it being collaborative means you can disagree with your therapist.
Facts.
Right? Like
in a skilled therapist is okay with that.
Exactly. Because I tell my clients all the time, I don't know every single answer. I don't.
No.
I'm learning from you just as we learning from each other. Right? So like you don't, what would you like to work on as a result of this?
People don't always know what they want to work on. I find that is one of the biggest things.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like after the session, based off of what we talked about,
I get what you're saying.
Well, sometimes I do have thoughts and I'd be like, yes, please tell me.
Yes.
Or if we did something that you don't like or that doesn't work for you. Because that's one of the main things I want you to work on is that autonomy and mm-hmm. knowing that you have a voice and what better place to do it than here.
This is the greatest practice for it because it's a safe space to practice it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let me normalize that it can be, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You get to have this and it ain't going to hurt nobody.
Ain't going to hurt nobody.
Okay. So how do people pay for therapy?
Ooh, I love this answer because there are a few things. You about to say something?
Nah, I just said I want to go back to how do clients know when the therapist might not be a good fit?
Okay, that's a good point to kind of.
Well, you want to come back to that one?
No. We can talk about that.
That and then come back?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, T.
So I was going to pose a question to y'all. Like what can clients do or like be on the lookout for to help them identify what therapist may or may not be a good fit for them?
It just made me think about, so clients will call for consultations. Especially if they have had maybe a not so good experience. So I actually had a client call me for a consultation and it's like they're interviewing you. So one of them asked me, how black are you? I said, girl,
damn,
I'm so black.
black.
And I'm like, I am. I'm like, oh, we're a good fit because I'm black as fuck.
Yeah.
But I love that question because I'm like, you know what? I like that question.
Me too.
But I've also had non-black therapists call me and ask me, is this just for black people? Do you only see black people? Ma'am.
Quite a bit of that.
I can see that because y'all's website is promoted that way, I think.
No, I have all types of clients.
I mean, I know that. But
most of my clients are black, but I see all types of clients. I appreciate the question because they need to know if this is a safe space for them as well. So that, asking those questions and flat out, I actually like when clients call and ask me those direct questions.
For sure.
I think those are going to be clients that work with me because you know what you want.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think what people should also look for is like, is this person actually paying attention to what I said?
Yes, and that's a big one for people.
Yes. Is this person paying attention to what I said? Are they summarizing? Are we even vibing, right? It's kind of like dating, right? Like, are we vibing? Does this feel comfortable?
No, but for real, like people can say, I've had plenty of clients be like,
yeah.
It just wasn't there. It just wasn't clicking. They were okay. It just wasn't clicking.
Right.
I've had clients say that too.
And I don't have feelings for a reason.
Right. And I don't take it personal if you're not connected. That is always that I put in. If at any point you don't feel connected to my process or this experience in itself, let me know. I have other colleagues that I could potentially refer you to. It's no biggie for me.
Yeah. Let me know what you feel like you want more or less of. Because I'm going to help you find them. Why?
Okay.
Because it ain't about me. It's not about me.
Okay.
I want you to get the care because you deserve it. Absolutely. And you deserve to be in a space that feels good for you.
So what you're telling the people is that it's okay to go to a therapist and have a session and then say, you know, and you don't have to tell the therapist in the session. You can send them an email and say, hey, you know what? This wasn't a good fit for me. I really appreciate it or whatever. I think as therapists, we would appreciate that.
I was just about to say that.
I am going to validate you so much and say, I am so proud of you. And I am so glad you know what you want and what you need. Please let me know if you need help.
Okay.
Finding somebody that's a better fit.
Do y'all ever feel a way when like a person doesn't say anything and then like you try to follow up and then they don't respond to the email?
But I don't feel a way, but I know it's because they maybe feel ashamed that they have stood you up. But it's also important to know that if you are in therapy and you're working on something with your therapist and you retract from that or you do something that you are ashamed of because you and your therapist have worked on it and you kind of are regressing, you can still come back to therapy. It's a safe space. We're not going to shame you at all.
Where people think they're getting a grade. They're like,
Yeah.
Oh, I did, but I tell them all the time, you're not.
You're human.
Okay. I'm not your coach. I'm not going to make you run labs. You're not going to get no whoop. Like, nothing's going, like, okay, let's talk about it.
We will talk about it. I will try to, we will have a talk about accountability.
Yes.
And does your goals need to change?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did this change for you? Because that's okay. But that's one of the reasons I think people stop coming back to therapy is because they have kind of fallen off in what they said they wanted out of this space in regards to their goals. So such as going back to an ex.
That's been the main thing.
I tell them all the time, you get to change.
All the time.
You do.
I tell them all the time, you worried about me and what I think about it?
That's my disclaimer.
Maybe I don't come to this space worried about me.
No.
Oh.
That's one of the disclaimers I have to give couples, that this space is not for you to manage your character for me.
Right.
Love that. Don't be a perfect client.
Don't be a perfect client. I need you to be honest because that's how we get the best outcomes. Because
you're going back to your life.
Exactly.
I don't feel one way or another. I'm here to help. I care about you. The only way I can adequately care about you is if I'm tuning into what you're saying, what you want, what you need, what's changing.
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
For sure.
And that can change.
So we are all women here. Do any of you see men in therapy?
Yes.
Okay. How is that experience? I have a lot of men on my caseload.
I've been pretty fortunate that they're receptive.
They are receptive, especially the, like, the Gen Z men.
Yeah. It's one of those, how can I explain it? There's a little guardedness, like, but I think a lot of people are, right? And then after a session or two, it's like, all right, I could relax a little bit. And I've had to encourage some, like, because mid-sentence, I actually don't know why I'm here. Or I don't know what I'm talking about. And so I'll say, well, let's maybe focus on how you feel after talking versus what you want to come to the therapy session to talk about, right? Like, do you feel a little bit more relaxed? Like, was it just nice to just talk? Like, how often do you really get a full hour to talk about yourself?
Right.
Take advantage.
Okay.
So I've been fortunate enough to where they're receptive, we work well together, and I still got some on my caseload that I've been seeing for a minute.
Me too. I like seeing men in therapy. It's a little slow at first because they have sometimes they challenge with like seeing what they really feel. And so when you kind of like help them show up in this space as just human, and also like it's okay if you like want to cry about this. Yes. And it's also okay for you to say, man, they really hurt my feelings. Like, because some men come and they talk to me about, like, issues with their moms or their dads. Because they're human, right? So they don't just get through life without feeling some of the same things we feel. But most importantly, letting them know that you are more than your pockets.
Right.
Because a lot of them have, a lot of men, they talk to me about their dating, right? And I'm like, whew. I'm like, if I can just put you with the client that's saying this, I'm almost about to be a matchmaker here. But they're talking to me about dating, and these are their lived experiences when it comes to dating. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, what was it about this particular woman that it hit your ego like that? Mm-hmm. And so they'd be like, you know, she was fine. So then I have to challenge them. Okay, well, what else?
What else?
Mm. And that's when it really gets interesting in therapy.
Oh, that'll get you every time.
Interesting in therapy with guys. So men, therapy is for y'all too.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. And what you just said is the approach that I take with men too. And you're also a feminist. Because that's pretty much what it is too. When you're working with men, I'm just saying, men are impacted by patriarchy too.
You don't
think that you get to have feelings.
Patriarchy.
Or
what is patriarchy?
You're only valid whenever. That's another episode.
Okay.
Another day.
But
I can go it. And we about to run out of time.
Okay.
But, we gonna come back to it.
Men are victims of patriarchy, and it is a downfall to them being well and caring for themselves.
Because you get to have feelings. You get to have needs. You get to request that those needs be met in a healthy and loving way. And you are more than your ability to provide or do all of these things. Like, you a whole person. Like, you get to have joy. Mm-hmm. You get to feel all the things that every other human gets to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so just letting them know that can really kind of open
affirming
up a whole
that
new
for
world.
Them.
Yes.
And also, we're going to wrap up this session in just a second. One of the things I learned in graduate school in my family sexuality class is that, like, people have been getting it wrong with saying the opposite sex when, you know, it's the other sex.
Mm.
And I'm like, because the opposite sex would mean, like, we're so opposite of each other that we have.
It's
just the other sex. It's not necessarily opposite, because men are not born not feeling their feelings. They're not born not being nurturing at all. They just are encouraged. We just encouraged differently as girls and boys.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're just encouraged to do different things. That's it.
Yeah. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, I think I said her name right, hit on this.
Say it again.
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Okay.
I believe it's right.
We should all be feminists?
Yes, and we should all be feminists. Pretty breaks it down beautifully whenever she says, whatever statement that you make, if you can't take gender out of it and it still be applicable, then you shouldn't be saying it.
Facts.
So if you're saying girls do this, if you can't take this out and say people do this, then you can't just put that on. Because at the end of the day, we're all humans. We all get to have feelings. We all get to have love. We all get to be responsible for one another.
Okay.
Like, if we can't make it applicable to all, then it don't just get to apply to one or the other.
So therapy is definitely for everybody.
Literally, that's for everybody.
Definitely for everybody.
Because I have seen everybody.
I have too.
Yes, it's for everybody.
Okay. Anything you want to leave the people with about therapy and tips for navigating that space or a decision?
Oh, wait, hold on, wait. Wait. We need you. Well, I guess we don't have time because we asked the question about, like, how do people pay for therapy?
We need to say that. How do people pay for therapy?
So there are a few ways. You can use your insurance, right?
Okay.
That's a part of it. You'll have a copay that you'll be responsible for paying. That's typically a percentage of the insurance will cover a percentage, and you will cover the remainder of whatever is left over, right? People's copays vary.
So copays have been about $0 to $50 on my end for people.
It's been $0 to $100.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I've seen it up in the $100 depending on what insurance plan you have.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then there is EAP, Employee Assistance Program, that typically comes with your job. Your job typically contracts with an EAP company.
Okay.
That's something that I will recommend for people who are a little bit hesitant and they're not really sure.
Okay.
Now, sometimes people are ready to invest in it financially, right?
Okay.
But that is an option for you, or you could pay out of pocket.
Usually EAP is completely free for sessions.
Yes.
For about 8 to 12 sessions.
Yes. The highest I've seen is 12. They are free. And then you can either pay out of pocket.
Okay.
Or there are sliding scales that some therapists do offer.
Okay, and OpenPath is a great resource for people who want affordable therapy. Mm-hmm. There is this conception that therapy is expensive, and it can be if the insurance is not covering it. Mm-hmm.
But that's where I challenge people to, like, did you pay attention to the plan that you select, right? Because sometimes mm-hmm. people pick the plan based off of what would be cheaper or less that will come out of their check.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, I see a lot of couples. I don't take insurance for couples, but I do work with people in regards to putting the work back on them to figure out how to budget therapy into their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's a great practice for them to start working together and collaborating on how to reach a set goal. We want to go to therapy. How can we plan for it?
Right. Yeah. For sure. And a lot of times people will ask, like, how often should I see my therapist? The first thing is the financial situation, right? Like, can you afford weekly? That. Yeah, me too. It's because they'll ask mm-hmm. us those questions. Like, how often do you think we should meet? And I always say, first, it depends on your financial situation since this is your copay. But for the sake of rapport, weekly every other week is what I would recommend. And then you can wean yourself out to monthly.
Yeah. We always start with weekly, but weekly is ideal usually to start off with. I think we probably always start with the financial one mm-hmm. first, just
because we're in a risk.
Important to us.
Yeah.
That we're not here to stress them out even more.
Right. Not at all.
We want it to fit in your life. We want it to look right, feel right.
Okay.
For your life. So.
Okay. Yeah. So we hope this session will help aid you in making a decision on whether or not you should seek therapy or make you reflect over if you need therapy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And feel free to comment on our Instagram if you have any questions about resources and things like that. We can certainly.
And the Instagram is Sisters in Therapy Pod.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Go love yourself.
Go love yourself.
Go love yourself.
Thank you, guys.
Hey guys, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Sisters in Therapy, that is S-I-S-T-A-S, in Therapy, and make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you listen to our show on, and give us a review. And as always, go love yourself.